Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And what did FDR and George W. Bush have in common? They both lied to get us into wars. Tough words from a new book called Why Leaders Lie. My next guest is University of Chicago political science professor John Mearsheimer. His specialty is international affairs and international security, and he has written an absolutely fascinating little book called Why Leaders Lie, The Truth About Lying in International Politics. He identifies five main types of lies that the U.S. and other governments tell and tells which he thinks are more or less damaging. And he says the most controversial part of this book may be his assertion that leaders actually do not lie very often. So, Professor Mearsheimer, welcome back to WNYC. Hello.
I'm glad to be with you, Brian.
You start by defining lying, spinning, and concealment. Is lying different from spinning?
Yes. Lying is where you say something that you actually know is not true. Spinning is where you exaggerate the positive aspects of a situation and downplay the negative aspects. If you were to ask President Obama, what's the state of the American economy, he would spin like crazy. He would tell you all the good things that are happening, and he'd downplay the negative things. But he would not lie to us, because if he did, the consequences would be very great if he was found out.
You're most concerned with lies that leaders tell in pursuit of what they see as their national interest. Why focus on those kinds of lies instead of purely selfish ones?
Well, I don't think it's very surprising that certain people lie for selfish reasons. But I think the argument that leaders lie because they think it's in the American national interest or the French national interest is kind of a surprising finding. Just to take the case of George W. Bush and his lieutenants in the run-up to the Iraq War, I think they told a few lies in the process of trying to take us to war. But I don't think they were doing that for selfish purposes. I think they believed that it was in the American national interest to go to war against Iraq. They believed it was very important to get rid of Saddam Hussein. And they were willing to do almost anything to get us into that war.
Another example you give that people today may not know is FDR lying to the public to try to get us into World War II before Pearl Harbor in 1941.
Yes, I think there are sort of three big presidential lies or sets of lies that involve getting us into wars. One was FDR tried to get us into World War II in the late summer of 1941. The second was the infamous Gulf of Tonkin lies of August 1964. And then finally, there were the series of lies that the Bush administration told in the run-up to the Iraq War. Now, I would argue that Roosevelt was doing the right thing. He was faced with a country that was remarkably isolationist at the time, and yet it was necessary for the United States to get in that war against Nazi Germany. Fortunately, the Japanese attacked us at Pearl Harbor later that year, and then Hitler did us a giant favor by declaring war on us 4 days later on December 11th, 1941, and we were finally in the war against Germany. But Roosevelt could not get the country off dead center because of isolationism, and I think he was smart to tell that particular lie at that point in time. But the fact is it didn't work because it didn't succeed in getting us in the war. In the case of Johnson and Bush, those lies worked, and we ended up in Vietnam, and we ended up in Iraq. And, of course, those wars turned out to be giant disasters.
Your last answer might be the first time anybody ever said, fortunately, the Japanese attacked us at Pearl Harbor. So I'll just say I understand what you were trying to say. But you also said there that the ends justify the means. If you're letting FDR off the hook for lying about the Greer incident because the end of getting us into World War II was, in your opinion, justified, then the ends justify the means in terms of telling a big public lie.
Well, in a very important way, the ends do justify the means. But in the case of Vietnam and in the case of Iraq, the wars turned out to be disasters. So when you talk about the ends, it's hard to justify the means by pointing to those ends. I talk about how lies can go wrong. And I make the argument that they sometimes backfire. And this is what happened in the case of Lyndon Johnson and George W. Bush.
Conversely, you say JFK lied to the American people during the Cuban Missile Crisis, and that it also made good sense to do so, but that was to keep us out of war.
Yeah, I think that of all the lies that I uncovered, the one that I would describe as the clearest case of a noble lie was Kennedy's lying to the American people and to the Europeans about the deal that he cut with Nikita Khrushchev to end the Cuban Missile Crisis. Khrushchev agreed to take the Soviet missiles out of Cuba, but he said there has to be a quid pro quo, and that is that the United States has to take the Jupiter missiles. Those were the medium-range ballistic missiles that we had in Turkey that were aimed at the Soviet Union. We had to take them out of Turkey. Now, Kennedy had no problem taking those missiles out of Turkey. In fact, he wanted to take them out before the Cuban Missile Crisis, but he understood that he could not tell the American people, and he could not tell the Europeans, especially the Turks, that this deal had been struck because he would be accused of being weak. So he effectively told Khrushchev that Khrushchev can't mention the deal, and if any reporters or anyone else in the United States ask Kennedy about the deal, he will lie, and he will simply say that there was no deal. I did not agree to take the Jupiters out of Turkey, but in fact, he did. And I think this was a noble lie because he ended the Cuban Missile Crisis. And given how dangerous the Cuban Missile Crisis was, remember, we were talking about the possibility of a general thermonuclear war between the United States and the Soviet Union. I think that telling a lie in that situation to the American people and to the Europeans made eminently good sense.
University of Chicago political science professor John Mearsheimer is my guest on WNYC. His new book is called Why Leaders Lie, The Truth About Lying in International Politics. Your book doesn't mention WikiLeaks, which came up on a previous segment about Tunisia and which we'll talk more about in general with our next guest, Clay Shirky. And I guess your book must have been finished before this latest State Department cables dump. But have the WikiLeaks State Department cables been a treasure trove for you of leaders' international lies?
Yes, I've looked very carefully at everything that's come out so far. And, of course, we only have a partial record. But I think I'd make 3 points. One is that you don't see that much evidence of lying. Second point I would make is that you don't see too many cases of leaders lying to each other. There's some cases of that. The most prominent one I found is that we approached the Syrians about the question of whether or not they were providing Hezbollah in Lebanon with missiles, and the Syrians adamantly denied that. But at the same time, it's clear from the WikiLeaks documents that that we had lots of evidence that the Syrians were providing Hezbollah with missiles. So that's a state-to-state lie. The Syrians are lying to the Americans. But there are not that many cases. And my third point is that most of the cases that you see so far in the WikiLeaks documents involve leaders lying to make sure that their people, their publics, don't find out what they're up to. And the most prominent case here that's received a lot of attention in the press involves Yemen. The leader of Yemen agreed to let the United States strike al-Qaeda targets in his country. But he told the Americans that he would have to lie to his people as to who was conducting those strikes. He would have to say it was not the Americans, but it was the Yemeni military that was attacking those al-Qaeda targets, when in fact that wasn't true. But he was doing that because he knew it would be disastrous for his political position on the home front if people found out that he was allowing the Americans to attack al-Qaeda targets. So you see a number of cases like that, which supports the basic thrust of my book, which is that leaders lie more often to their publics than they do to other countries.
Why would that be the case?
Well, for, I think, 2 reasons. First of all, it's very difficult to lie to other countries because there's just not a lot of trust to begin with. Ronald Reagan used to talk about trust, but verify but trust, or trust but verify. And the point that he was making is you really can't trust the Soviet Union. You have to verify what they're doing. And the same thing was true with regard to the Soviet view towards the United States. Great powers just don't trust each other very much. So it's hard to lie because there's not a lot of trust. When it comes to leaders in their own publics, most publics trust their leaders. I think certainly true in the United States. I like to tell the story that in the run-up to the Iraq War, I heard a briefing by Scott Ritter that basically convinced me. Scott Ritter was the former weapons inspector who was making the case that Saddam did not have any WMD. But after listening to him talk, I was convinced that he was correct, that Saddam had no WMD. But then Donald Rumsfeld said that he was certain that they had WMD, and he was certain because he said, quote unquote, "We know where they are." After hearing Rumsfeld, I said that Ritter just must not have all the evidence, because Rumsfeld wouldn't say to the American public that we know they have WMD because we actually know where they are if it wasn't true. So I trusted Rumsfeld. That may sound foolish now, but I did. Mm-hmm. And my basic gut instinct was that the administration wouldn't lie to us like that. Now, one could argue I was foolish given what I've written in the book, but I think that explains in good part why you get more lying to a leader's public than you do to other countries.
What do you hope will come of your book? Less lying, better lying, anything in particular?
I just wrote the book to make it clear that leaders sometimes lie, and they lie for good reasons. I tried to make the case that although instinctively I think all of us believe that lying is a bad thing, that's not always the case. But on the other hand, I have a large chapter at the end of the book where I talk about the downside of lying. We talked a little bit before about lies that backfire when leaders tell lies and they don't work. But there's also a real danger of what I call blowback, which is that if leaders lie a lot to their own publics about foreign policy issues, it's not long before they're lying to their own publics about other kinds of issues as well. And I think for a society to function, it's impossible to have a culture of deceit, a culture where there's lots of lying. I think the less lying that you have in a society, the fewer Bernie Madoffs that you have, the better off the society is. So I think you have to be very careful not to go overboard in appreciating the strategic virtues of lying. There are strategic virtues, but it is dangerous.
Funny that you mentioned Bernie Madoff. You've now written a book about why political leaders lie. Maybe your next book should be about why corporate leaders lie.
Well, I think it's pretty clear why they lie. It's, you know, for selfish reasons.
Well, we leave it there with University of Chicago political science professor John Mearsheimer. His new book is called Why Leaders Lie, The Truth About Lying in International Politics. Thank you so much. That was fascinating.
My pleasure.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.